call the Monday, June 25th meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to order. Members, we have two bills to take up, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 420. And I see that Senator Gordley has joined us, and this is her bill. So I would ask her to please come forward and tell us about the bill. And Mr. Simbridge, could you...
I can summarize it for you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 420 creates a 12-member Environmental Justice Task Force to be appointed by the governor. It specifies the duties and responsibilities to include defining environmental justice issues, make recommendations to the governor, advise natural resource agencies. It requires natural resource agencies to consider environmental justice issues, including community concerns and public participation in their decision-making.
Thank you, Jim. And good evening, Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It is a good evening, and there's sunshine out there. Mm-hmm. For the record, I'm Avelle Gordley, representing District 23 in Multnomah County. And this bill, the idea for the bill, goes back to 1991, when I had the opportunity to attend the United Nations Conference on Environmental Justice, and then came back to Oregon and worked with a number of community-based organizations to address some of the environmental hazards in our local community, one of which was polluted waters in the Columbia Slough, which is also an area where many people, many local residents were fishing. Members of the Vietnamese community, longtime African Americans, some members of the Latino community as well, fishing from the Columbia Slough. And a part of our work was to get the area posted and to make known to the community the health hazards associated with that particular location. The problem is environmental discrimination. Environmental discrimination has been defined as any policy or practice that generates environmental impacts for groups or communities that are identifiable by race, color, national origin, or economic background, and also whether the issues are identified or located in rural or urban communities. And discrimination includes both the lesser enforcement of environmental standards and any practices that would limit participation in decision-making by these groups or communities. In Oregon, we have had two past governors over the past 15 years put in place by executive order, advisory committees on environmental justice issues. The first governor was Governor Roberts, who put in place a task force that looked at these issues as they relate to our state. And then Governor John Kitzhaber followed up with his own executive order and task force. We also have two state agencies who have examined these issues over time. Those agencies include the DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, and then also in the Department of Human Services, the Oregon Health Division. What this bill would do is put in place a 12-member Environmental Justice Task Force appointed by the governor. We have the support of the governor's office in terms of the governor being willing to provide staff support to this task force. The measure also directs state agencies to report annually to the task force and to assist the task force with its work. There would be an annual report also submitted to the governor identifying environmental justice issues in our state. This bill passed the Senate, and that vote
We actually have it on our staff measures.
You do.
I think it was 23.5.
That's correct, Madam Chair. That is what I would share at this point, Madam Chair, and I look forward to your passage of the measure out of this committee. And again, I hope I've made the point that the Office of the Governor will provide staff to support the task force.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. Are there any questions for the senator? Yes, Representative Berger.
Yeah, this is my first look at it. Senator, it's a task force, but it seems to me, just looking at it, that it's an ongoing commission, not a task force, that it doesn't have an end. Is there an end in here?
I would say that this work is work that will continue for some time. As I pointed out, we started in my community looking at these issues back in 1991. And when you consider that we have issues such as lead, a pollution, air pollution corridor along I-5, I-84, brownfields, and other hazards in our communities. I think these are issues that are going to be with us for a while, and what we need to better understand as a state is what are the policies that we need to have in place that can help us understand what it is we need to do to assist our communities.
In other words, it's not really a task force in the sense of a short-term task. It is a fully ongoing commission, would be a better way of describing it.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's basically my question.
Yes, Representative Becker.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Gordley.
Thank
I'm sorry,
you.
I picked up the same representative all the time.
That's where we started.
I'm looking in here, and I'm not seeing that there's any members, any elected officials included, or any members of the legislature. Am I missing something, or was there a reason for omitting elected officials?
I wouldn't say they were omitted. If the governor should so choose to select legislators or a legislator to the task force, that would be up to him. We put the emphasis on the importance of having people who represent communities that have been historically underserved or historically greatly impacted by environmental justice issues, but also put an emphasis on having folks that represent rural and urban communities as well.
Mm-hmm. And I see that because there is representation from what are known as the advocacy commissions, and those do have legislative representatives, it's possible mm-hmm. that some of those members could be legislators. Other questions for Senator Gordley?
Sorry.
Yes, I see that. Yes, and the staff points out that a member of the task force who is a member of the legislature, according to the bill, may serve only in an advisory capacity. So thank you very much, Senator. Oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Berger, did you have another question?
Well, no, I was just note that compensation for commission members is included in here under the governor's office. I presume that there has been accommodation for that in the governor's, I don't know what the cost is, but it's under the governor's budget.
The Madam Chair and Representative Berger, what we know is that the governor's office would require a part-time position and funding for that position and task force meeting costs. And the Joint Committee on Ways and Means dealt with that in its review of the Governor's Office budget.
Thank you.
And this bill did actually come out of the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Yes, it did.
And to the Senate floor. Mm-hmm. So
just made a little detour here.
I will make a statement.
Yes, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is interesting that this is coming here at this point, because I have watched this since early 90s, actually, when I was in college. It goes a long ways back. And my son, in law school, when he was at Syracuse, ended up being kind of an expert witness in a case. A group called him to come and do some testifying in San Francisco, all about lead poisoning of young children in urban areas, caused by two purposes. One was windowsill smog that came from cars at that time, and lead paint. And I thought, lead paint is all gone. He said, and he let us know that this is late 90s. It's a lot of it's still around, and especially in some of these areas where there are extreme poverty and others, it's still there. And the paint on top oftentimes is not, but the paint underneath. And there were a number of small children who were being poisoned on a regular basis because of lead paint and lead from a car exhaust, which is changing a bit now. But I think it's something that we do need to look at and recognize that we do it. And I'm also always thinking of Aaron Brockovich and that movie and how we end up having people living in places that they probably shouldn't be living in because it's cheaper at times. And so I think it's a good thing to do.
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, I would just offer that what we have before us is an opportunity to define environmental justice issues in the state of Oregon. And many states are ahead of us in this work, and it's our time to do that definition and bring our state agencies along as we do that work and have the work guided by folks in our communities around the state who know best what are the concerns and issues around environmental hazards in their communities.
Any additional questions for the senator? Okay, thank you very much, Senator Gordley, for bringing this to us and coming
thank
down
you,
in the
Chair.
Evening when I know the Senate has completed its work for the day to hear your thoughts. Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 420 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves Senate Bill 420 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Thatcher?
Yeah, I really think this has a great intention. I just have some reservations here, and I can't exactly put my finger on it yet, but I just do, and I'm not going to be supporting it this time. I just thought I would.
Further discussion. Okay, Shauna, would you please call the roll?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Dingfelder will carry this on the floor, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 420. And I will open the work session on Senate Bill 858B. And Mr. Stembridge, could you please tell us about this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is Senate Bill 858B. It gives adult foster care home providers the right to collectively bargain with the state of Oregon. It specifies that adult foster care home providers are persons who receive payment from state for providing adult foster care home services and recognizes the labor organization identified in Executive Order 0707 as the exclusive representative of adult foster care home providers. You have a copy of that executive order, I believe.
Yes, looks like we do. And is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on Senate Bill 858? Please come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arthur Towers, political director for Service Employees Union Local 503. And I wanted to talk for a couple minutes about adult foster home care, and then a couple minutes about the content of the legislation. Adult foster home providers care for five or fewer disabled, elderly, or developmentally disabled Oregonians, and they bring them into their home by and large. adult foster care providers are reimbursed between $725 and about $1,600 per month per client. So it's low-wage work with high turnover. And in Oregon's vaunted continuum of care, where we have a strong emphasis on community-based care, keeping people out of nursing homes and living with a little bit more independence, this has become a somewhat neglected link in that system between in-home care, adult foster care, residential care facilities, assisted living, and nursing homes. This is kind of the forgotten child of that group oftentimes. Adult foster care providers provide 24/7 care, and usually most of the folks are caring for, again, just two or three people in a home-like setting. We've been out, our union's been working closely with adult foster care providers, and the big concerns that they have are a lack of training. They're required by law to get 12 hours of training per year, but training is so scantily available. Many providers go through the same course year after year after year. They're also concerned about affordable liability insurance, which they're required to have, respite care, improved reimbursement rates, and health care. So that's kind of the background of the work. In terms of the bill itself, the bill allows adult foster care home providers to bargain collectively with the state. And those adult foster care providers who would be allowed to bargain with the state are those that already have a financial relationship with the state. In other words, they accept Medicaid clients. Okay, so there are a number of adult foster home providers who take private pay clients only, and they would not be the ones that would be bargaining collectively. It also excludes agencies and entities. In some places, a county may operate an adult foster home, or a large entity like a hospital may do that, and they would also not be in this unit. The bill also, as the committee administrator mentioned, codifies the executive order 0707. The Employment Relations Board found that 59% of adult foster care providers in Oregon signed cards to join SCIU and want to form a union. And that, again, was the kind of certified number that the Employment Relations Board found on cards. So in closing, the other point I want to make is that Senate Bill 858 does not impact a client's right to choose their care provider, but this bill should help go a long ways towards improving the quality of care. With the in-home care, for example, what we've been able to do, what the workers have fought for, just in the improved training, is setting up a training program that now 3,800 providers have gone through. Now that they've fought for improved benefits, the turnover, which used to be McDonald's-style turnover in terms of ripping people through the system, is now stabilized, and so the quality of care has improved as well. And so I will close there, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Art, on page 1 in line 14,
mm-hmm. What does that mean?
We have to see.
Who is not a natural person?
Oh, I pointed to Buckley, but who pointed to me?
It probably would categorize our southern delegation of this panel, but besides that, what are the adult foster home providers? What does it mean to the exclusion of people who are not a natural person?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, a very good question. It covers counties, for example, or hospitals, some of whom are adult foster care providers.
Madam Chair, as I recall from the work that we did in Business and Labor Committee from years ago, a natural person is an individual as opposed to a corporation or a government entity.
That's right. Thank you.
Those corporations are treated like...
Thank you. Yes, Representative Honey, is that it? Yeah. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. You say that the people in the adult foster care have signed up to join SEIU. Why don't they just do it? why do we need this in place? To me, it should be every worker's God-given right to join a union if they so desire.
Madam Chair, Representative Escobar, right on point. What the bill does is it requires the state to bargain collectively with the recognized, with the adult foster care providers. Without this legislation, the state wouldn't be required to go through the collective bargaining process to set reimbursement rates for the providers.
Representative Esquivel, did you have another question?
Fine.
Okay, Representative Berger.
May I have the date of the governor's order? I think it was June 1st. It looks like it's on the last page.
Okay. First day of June 2007.
Okay, thank you. I was looking for that. Mm-hmm. Didn't get all the way to the end.
Does everyone have the fiscal limits? $125,894.
Where's the fiscal?
It's on Sal's computer.
It's on my computer. It's $125,894.
And is that anticipated in some budget, Madam Chair?
I do not have an answer to that question. Do you have
I do not. No, I see that there is an error on our staff measure summary that says no fiscal impact on the Senate one. It says fiscal statement issued.
What do you mean wrong, Bill?
No.
And this looks like an other funds.
It's for, I think, relating to cause and effect of this, because you're going to have to hire someone to monitor it, and then you're going to have to, well, one was DAS, and the other one was, what was the other person? Because there's 1.5 people there.
It was nice that you'd take a break from playing solitaire, finally, after all this time.
So, Madam Chair, if this should pass from our committee, where would it be heading to?
I believe it would be heading to the floor.
No, fiscal.
Mm-hmm. What does
that mean? It means it's closed.
And it's funny because we have on the staff measure summary, there's no revenue impact.
I know. Your staff admitted an error on that.
Oh, that's right.
How many times are you going to make these?
Just a couple more. Is there? Was there? There wasn't any.
Here we go.
On that, was there?
Many calls, man.
Be helpful to check with somebody's mail phone to see if it may have already been anticipated.
Yeah, we could certainly call LFO and see if we could get somebody who staffed this to come explain
it. Stand at ease.
Yeah, well, how about if the committee stands at ease for a moment? we actually have calls out to apparently Department of Human Services, who is in the room, had placed an indeterminate impact on this. They had not seen this before either, so we, I think, need to just get some more information and then come back and look at it again. So we will stand in recess and then let you know when we're ready to take the bill up. Committee is in recess. Still, I believe, June 25th, meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to Order. Members, we were in recess when we left, and we were in the middle of a work session on Senate Bill 858. I have been told by a committee member that we do have one more witness who wishes to testify on this bill, and so even though we're in a work session, I will honor that. And Grover Simmons, would you like to come forward?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me to testify at this extraordinary hour. For the record, my name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Independent Adult Foster Home Providers State Association. And I just reiterate about six or seven points very quickly. We can call it an evening. First of all, this bill converts independent private employers into employees. Quite fundamental. And then it makes those employees employees of the state of Oregon. And as state employees, we're then would be affected by the card check bill, House Bill 2891, which would make, which would eliminate the right to vote by secret ballot in a collective bargaining situation. If the union gathers authorization cards, submits them to the Employment Relations Board, if they get 50%, then they are certified by the board under the card check concept. And as public employees, which this bill would make us, we are affected by that process. Very unusual. The bill attempts to establish a brand new system of collective bargaining law, labor law, in the state. And our legal counsel, Les Smith, who has practiced labor law for over 35 years, he taught labor law at Lewis and Clark, and he was the chairman of the labor law section of the Oregon State Bar. He says this bill is unconstitutional because it's preempted by the National Labor Relations Act. And that act, as you all know, is founded in and on the U.S. Constitution, and the Commerce Clause and the Supremacy Clause would be applicable in any kind of legal challenge to this bill. The bill gets complicated because it attempts to merge the governor's executive order and the original bill. The original bill, for example, had the bargaining unit to be the whole state. All the providers in the state of Oregon were covered by the original bill. The modified bill, after we had testified on the subject extensively on the Senate side, the bill before you has been modified to allow the bargaining unit to be changed by the governor after you all go home, but before the bill becomes effective. Isn't there a 90-day period that the governor has to sign a bill? So within that period, he could change by executive order the bargaining unit. Now that may be off the wall, except for the fact the bargaining unit includes over 500 adult foster homes in Multnomah County, most of whom, like 80-85% of whom, are Romanians. They oppose this bill, and when we had it, when we were in before the Senate, they filled the hearing room. They overflowed the second hearing room, and they were standing in the hall watching television. And to a person, they opposed this bill in great force. Anyway, those are some of the concerns that we have about it. We think it's truly can be is preempted by the National Labor Relations Act, and we respectfully ask you to do something about it. Like, don't pass this bill tonight. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, we were looking at the fiscal impact statement, and having looked at it, we have decided that the place for this bill to go is to the Ways and Means Committee, and we have been in consultation with them, and that seems to be an avenue available. So we are in a work session. Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 858 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves that Senate Bill 858A move to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Mr. Stenbridge.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out that ordinarily we need a letter from the Speaker, which I think we can we'll be able to get on this bill. I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, I think that is underway. So, Shauna, would you please call the roll?
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And members, I don't see anything else on the agenda. Is there anything else for the good of the order?
Darn.
Yeah, I'm just devastated, Madam Chair.
Okay, then see nothing further to come.
Can we make a committee bill?
I just think of bringing some drafts to committee bill introduction of my favorite ideas. Not yet moved forward, but
I know of a resolution that I've got hanging out.
Can we take a House Bill
3535? How about
14?
Bang that gavel, man.
Where's that signing day resolution?
Committee is adjourned.
Thank you.